Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show.
This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show. Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, we'll hear from some of the Hall of Fame inductees from the football weekend. And even though we usually save our top 10 lists for Tuesdays on the show, maybe fitting to do a ranking in just a little bit of the best Hall of Famers that were inducted this past weekend, because there were a whole lot. Due to the pandemic, we couldn't have last year's Hall of Fame induction ceremony, so we had two classes in one, plus they had to push off the 100-year celebration of the NFL or professional football. So that was, it was like a trio all combined over this past weekend in Canton. And we'll get to that coming up in a little bit and hear from some of those inductees as well. Hey, college football is right around the corner. In just a moment, we'll run through the college football teams that have the most pressure on them in each conference for college football. Because college football is right around the corner. And ESPN Charleston wants to kick off the season with a good old-fashioned golf tournament. Coming up Thursday, August 19th, 10 days from now. That's next week, next Thursday, at the links at Stono Ferry. So come out and represent your college team at your foursome at Stono Ferry, because the winning foursome will score tickets to the homecoming game of their favorite college team, courtesy of ESPN Radio Charleston, 98.9 FM. A portion of the proceeds donated to will also be donated to FanTalk families to benefit the Ronald McDonald House. But you can still sign up today at charlestonsportsradio.com to register your foursome and to pick which college you are representing, your favorite school that you'll be playing for, because if your foursome wins, we will get you tickets to the homecoming game this year, plus some other free swag or cool swag for your school and a framed photo of your team's stadium for you to hang on the wall. It's the kickoff to college football golf tournament going on next Thursday, August 19th, at the links at Stono Ferry. Still time to sign up online at charlestonsportsradio.com. College football is right around the corner. I had the realization this weekend that, 3 weeks from Thursday, I will be broadcasting the first Citadel game of the year. And so I started to begin my prep for that first game at Coastal Carolina. Started to put my spotting boards, as they call it in the business, put together my spotting boards as best as I could without having some sort of depth chart for these teams. But, you know, building just the skeleton, if you will, the layout to get ready so I have less to do. But I realized it dawned on me, right? It starts to click, wait a minute. It's only 3 weeks. It always feels so much further away. It's not till, Labor Day weekend, not till September. Then you wake up and it's like, 3 weeks from this Thursday. A couple of more Thursdays and I'll be in Conway broadcasting that game. So looking forward to it. But football, actual games that count, they're right around the corner. As we head towards this college football season, which teams have the most pressure on them in each conference? You know, if you go to ESPN.com, they have a couple of interesting articles on there. It's through ESPN Plus. You have to have that Plus subscription. But on ESPN.com, they put out a couple of articles this morning about teams that will bounce back this year. And also the teams that have been the biggest underachievers over the past, they actually looked at the last 30 years. But when they looked at teams that will bounce back this year from disappointing seasons, that included teams like Michigan, Miami, Minnesota from the Power Five, teams that had disappointing years last season that need to improve this year. And it's hard to judge, Penn State would be another. It's hard to judge how much of last year was truly the team and how much of it was the pandemic. Now, not everybody struggled because of what they were going through with the pandemic. We saw that. right? Clemson was fine. Alabama was fine. Ohio State, the best teams in college football were truly fine. We saw that in all sports. Tom Brady won his Super Bowl during the pandemic. Right? LeBron James won the NBA Finals during a pandemic. The greatest quarterback of all time, the best basketball player we have in the league. The greats, that's why they're the greats, because they can rise above it. The others that struggle, that separates the best from the good. Or certainly the below average. They're the ones that can't handle things like that. They struggle a little bit more. But now that we get more towards a more normal season, where it's maybe more of a level playing field, could a Michigan bounce back and play well this year? Could a Penn State? Are they as good as a Alabama, a Clemson, one of those teams? No, they're not, and they showed that last year by struggling as much as they did. Not as good as an Ohio State who managed the same situation far better. But when you don't have that same adversity this year, right, you could have a better season, be more improved, compete, because the ability or the talent should certainly be there. So which teams are under the most pressure in each of the Power 5 conferences? Well, I just mentioned a couple of them. Starting in the ACC, I would say it is Miami. You can make a case for UNC as well, because we have been putting UNC, and it's our own fault as college football fans. It's not UNC. Mac Brown didn't come out and say, hey, we're winning the national championship this year. It was the rest of us as either fans or media members that bought into the hype and thought last year that UNC could be a fringe playoff team. And they were good, but they certainly weren't at that level. And now this year, year three of Mac Brown, Sam Howell should be one of the best quarterbacks in the country, looking to finally be able to compete with a Clemson, right? At least hold your own in a potential ACC matchup. So UNC, you could certainly make a case for them that they have the most pressure in the ACC. But I would actually say Miami, because Miami, the expectations are always higher. We talk every year about Miami. Is this the year that Miami will be back? We'll have the U. They'll be good again. Yada, yada, yada. And we thought it was last year going to be that case, or that was going to be the case. Year two of Manny Diaz, they bring in De'Ara King. And we thought, okay, this is a Miami team that can really make some noise. And that certainly was not the case. This year, we believe, will come down to Miami and UNC when they battle in the middle of October for the chance to essentially be in that ACC championship at the end of the year to take on Clemson. And now you have De'Ara King coming back, second year in the program, fifth-year quarterback, or even sixth-year at this point. You have your offensive coordinator back, second year with the program, right? Another year for Manny Diaz. You have a lot of guys returning, especially on defense. And now we certainly are building it up this year as the Miami-UNC matchup in October to find out who could be the second-best team in the ACC and if they could actually compete with Clemson. But not only that, it's not only the pressure of taking advantage of this opportunity this season, but also moving forward, that if De'Ara King can play well, he just signed another name, image, and likeness deal over the weekend, by the way, and did so with, I think it was the Florida Panthers, the NHL team. He became the first college athlete to sign a deal with a professional sports team through name, image, and likeness. He'll be helping to promote the Florida Panthers, I believe. So De'Ara King's getting all sorts of publicity and deals and everything, and, you know, big name, at a big brand, Miami. And if he could play well, and do, you know, if he could succeed on the field instead of just name, image, and likeness deals off the field, it could really bode well or go a long way for Miami moving forward in terms of recruiting, in terms of trying to get back on that national stage and continuing to elevate this program. That if you see the success that they do have or see De'Ara King play like that, as I say all the time, right, Oklahoma, it started with Josh Heupel, and then it led to all these other great quarterbacks, Jason White and Sam Bradford and all the quarterbacks recently. You want to go play there. For Clemson, same idea. You see one quarterback succeed, and now if you're a good quarterback coming out of high school, you think, oh, I could go play there, succeed, become an NFL quarterback, potentially win a national championship, develop. And so for Miami, same idea. They have to get back on that level where you look at Miami as a true viable option for the top players in the country. Remember, Tate Martell was the big name that they got recently, and he flamed out. He's now at his third school in 4 years. They thought they got that other big recruit. De'Ara King, when he leaves this year, right, you have to have the next line of quarterbacks to come afterwards. If Miami can take that step forward and get back in an ACC title game or compete or be a top 10 program, show that they are maybe not the U of 20 years ago, but they're moving in the right direction with all the talent in Florida and the big brand and name, image, and likeness and everything else that comes with that school, it could certainly be a huge boost for recruiting moving forward. It could be the start of something, not only this year, but for years in the future. In the Big Ten, the team with the most pressure on them, of course, is Michigan. You can make a case for James Franklin at Penn State, but I don't think anybody has more pressure on them in the Big Ten than Harbaugh at Michigan. This may be his last stand. And he made some comments that would be along those same lines at the press conference at Big Ten Media Days when he said something along the lines of, you know, we're going to beat Ohio State or die trying, which to take that, to turn a phrase, the die trying part would be really losing your job. That would be the dying, right? Not literal death in this sense, but as a football coach, that would be like the death for a football coach would be losing your job. You're going to try to beat Ohio State or die trying. You're going to try to do it until, you know, until it costs you your job, until they get rid of you. If it's the last thing you do at Michigan. But for Michigan, what a disappointing season a year ago. The expectations are always sky high, especially when you bring in a coach like Harbaugh. He had to take a pay cut, right? He got a contract extension this past offseason but remains on the hot seat. And Michigan just has never been able to reach those expectations set forth by the fan base, especially since they hired Harbaugh. And they need to do that this year because if Michigan underachieves this season, if they don't win enough games, if they're not competing for the Big Ten, if they have like a 7-6 season, I think you'll see a coaching change there in Michigan. And I know many believe that Michigan will never fire Harbaugh. He'd have to go on his own. But I think at a certain point, you get to that crossroads where you think, like, what are we doing here, right? I mean, this is Michigan. We're just treading water. We have to make some sort of change. I think that's on Harbaugh this year. In the Pac-12, it's USC. Because of the big brand, much like Miami, much like Michigan, we could say the same for Texas and the Big 12. These big brands that we expect them to get back to where they once were. We put those big expectations on them every year. But not only that, for USC, this is their opportunity to actually win this conference because it is so wide open, and USC has plenty of talent on that roster. They have the best quarterback probably in the conference. That's always a big boost. And they have a coach on the hot seat. So for USC, it's a big year. And similar to Miami, not only for this season, but moving forward. USC is losing all of the California talent to other schools, most notably the SEC. You have to start to show something in order to keep those kids home. Right, in order for them to want to go to USC. Make USC cool again, much like Miami, much like Texas, in part why Texas is interested in the SEC. And if you start winning, if you start to build something, right, kids look at that and see, like, well, maybe that is a viable option. USC, Miami, Michigan, to a lesser extent, all need to accomplish those things for this year and moving forward. In the SEC, the most pressure is on Georgia. Because with JT Daniels and this talent and this roster, we believe they finally have the pieces to get past Alabama. And I referenced that article earlier from ESPN.com of the biggest underachievers the last 30 years. Spoiler alert, you can go read it for yourself, but I'll tell you who number one on the list is. Georgia, biggest underachiever the last 30 years. So there's pressure on them every season to begin with to finally get it done. And then you tell me that they have JT Daniels, who I and many others believe is the best quarterback in the conference, and they have the talent that they're bringing back in the backfield and the wide receiver position, and, you know, the rest of that division is a little weaker than maybe normal. If Florida is the next best team and Florida lost a lot of pieces from a year ago, this is Georgia's season to finally get it done. I've been saying this all offseason, right? If there was ever a chance to finally clear that hurdle, get over that hump, get the whatever cliche you want to use, right? Get the monkey off your back. Finally beat Alabama, get your white whale, any other cliche you want to throw out there, this could be it, but you have to take advantage. And if you fail this year, if you're Georgia, and say you underachieve once again, then you lose any last hope that you had or any benefit of the doubt that was given amongst the general college football fan base. Because already, most college football fans, I would guess, do not believe in Georgia or trust Georgia to begin with. And now you have all these pieces, and if you still can't win, those that are still hanging around, the last ones on that ship, would probably finally jump off. And they'd be like, okay, this is never going to happen. If it doesn't happen this year, it's never going to occur. And the team in the Big 12 with the most pressure. See, this one was interesting. The Big 12 I struggled with most. I think the other conferences are fairly obvious. Georgia, I think, is fairly obvious. Same with Michigan, USC. You think of big brands. In the Big 12, along those same lines would probably be a Texas. And you can make a strong case for a Texas. Year one of Steve Sarkisian, maybe he'd be given a longer leash. But I would actually say either Iowa State or maybe even Oklahoma, because a lot of people are picking Oklahoma to win the national championship this year, including Phil Steele, who's like the godfather of college football predictions. And even he is going with Oklahoma. They're believed to have the quarterback that will be the number one pick in next year's draft for a school that has underachieved in the playoff and hasn't won that national championship in far too long. So they're similar to Georgia in the sense that if there was ever a year to get over that hurdle, it would have to be now, especially before you join the SEC where things will be made more difficult. You can make a strong case certainly for Oklahoma. But I also think you could say Iowa State. Now, if the Big 12 remains after Oklahoma and Texas leaves, then for Iowa State, you'll have an easier path. I don't think the Big 12 will remain. So if I'm Iowa State, I don't know what my future holds. All I know is for this year, right, we have the Big 12. These teams are in it. I don't think Oklahoma and Texas will be in here next year. But Iowa State, you have no idea what this is going to happen with this conference, what's going to happen down the road, where you, maybe you'll go to the Big 10, the Pac-12, who knows? Maybe you'll join an even tougher conference. But many believe Iowa State's good enough to reach the playoff this year. They are believed to have one of the best quarterbacks in the country. So similar to Georgia and even Oklahoma, if there was ever a time to get it done, this would be the time, where many believe that they are a playoff team. The rest of that conference, it really comes down to them and Oklahoma. You get past that one team, you're in. And if you don't take advantage this year, Brock Purdy's gone. A lot of those other pieces will be gone. Who knows how much longer Matt Campbell will stay there. And then who knows what happens to that team moving forward. Even if the Big 12 remains until 2025, right, and you have, say, three more years. And then after that, it's like, okay, well, then where are we going to go? Or who's coming into this conference? Are we going to remain a Power 5 conference? Depending on what happens in the future, Iowa State may not have a whole lot more opportunities, or at least opportunities as good as this one, to actually make the playoff for once. So I think there's some pressure on them as well. The Big 12, you can make a strong case for any of those three teams having the most pressure. If I had to choose one, I'd probably say Oklahoma, but I think a real strong case can be made for Iowa State and, of course, even Texas, because every year there is always pressure on Texas, Michigan, USC, some of those other schools that I referenced. Now, last segment, I was talking about actors who do not bathe or shower. This all started with Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis were the first. And then Jake Gyllenhaal came out and said, yeah, I'll go days without showering. There's another one as well that I didn't see. Apparently Brad Pitt has admitted of going days without a shower. Imagine that, right? Brad, who everyone, all the women love him, right? One of the real, the true sex symbols of Hollywood. Now he's saying, yeah, I don't bathe very often either. He said the reason he was unable to bathe, he has an excuse. He has a reason. But he admitted that he doesn't shower all that often. But he says the reason why is because he is a hands-on father to six young children. So he doesn't have time. That's what he said. Apparently, he told Eli Roth, who he did a movie with, that he uses baby wipes to hide the fact that he's not showering. Instead of showering, Brad Pitt just uses baby wipes to wipe himself down. And he said, I got six kids. All you got to do is just take baby wipes, a couple of quick wipes under the pits, and I don't have time to take a shower. I'm getting peed on all day by my kids, is what Brad Pitt said. So there you go. So Brad Pitt's another one. So what is the trick to being such a good-looking celebrity in Hollywood and, you know, this famous star that everybody would love to have an opportunity to be with? Apparently not showering. Now, there's a whole article on this. Jennifer Lawrence once did a movie of Brad Pitt and said that he smells amazing. Nothing like I've ever smelled. Eventually, we had to ask him what cologne he's wearing. And he told us, I don't wear cologne. It's just my musk. So there you go. Brad Pitt apparently is such a man and so good-looking, he doesn't even need to shower, and he smells better for it. I wonder if some would look at Brad Pitt any differently. You look at him and think, oh, what an attractive man, right? If you're a woman looking at Brad Pitt or watching his movies, then you find out he only uses baby wipes to clean himself. You look at him differently. Joe, would you look at someone differently if they told you they never shower or they shower like once a week?
Well, I might smell them differently.
That's true. You would know when they're coming down the hall. I don't know what other actors are doing this, but it's wild to me, these celebrities. And they're like bragging about it too, sharing that, oh yeah, I don't shower either. I go a week without showering. Keep it to yourself. Hey, the Hall of Fame induction was over the weekend. We'll rank the top Hall of Famers from over the weekend coming up in just a little bit. But we'll be playing some audio throughout the rest of the afternoon of some of these different speeches. Let's first hear from, let's grab Jimmy Johnson, who was inducted into the Hall of Fame. You may say long time coming, but he gave a speech yesterday. And when you talk about Jimmy Johnson, and you talk about the Cowboys, of course, you always think of Jerry Jones and the drama of the Cowboys. So, of course, Jimmy had to reference Jerry Jones yesterday in his speech.
I guess you're asking, you want to know what I'm going to say about Jerry Jones. Well, Jerry, you told me, you said, we're going to make sports history before we ever bought the Cowboys, before you bought the Cowboys, because I didn't pay a damn cent. And you know what? We did make sports history. Not only for the Dallas Cowboys, but for the NFL. to go from the worst team in the league 2 years in a row to winning back-to-back Super Bowls and building a heck of a football team. We did it, and let me tell you, from the bottom of my heart, thank you, Jerry. Thank you for giving me that opportunity.
It was also classic Jerry Jones that if you did watch the first preseason game on Thursday, and they had a very nice moment in the pregame show, I should say, where Jimmy was there because he works for Fox, and right, and Troy Aikman works for Fox, so he was there, and they brought Jerry Jones, and you know they're all in their jackets and everything, and they're talking about it, and Jerry was talking about putting Jimmy Johnson in the Ring of Honor this year, and that became a whole story. So it was like classic Jerry Jones that even in Jimmy's what should be his biggest weekend, Jerry was stealing the headlines by saying, like, oh, yeah, we'll celebrate him at a Cowboys game this year and this and that, because we know that that relationship hasn't been very good. And so, the skeptics say, oh, yeah, Jerry sees this as an opportunity to make it about himself or to make himself look better by mending the fences publicly with Jimmy Johnson on Jimmy Johnson's biggest weekend.
Well, they also made sports history in another way.
What's that?
Jimmy Johnson was the first football coach to win a national championship at the college level and then go on to win a Super Bowl as a pro coach.
Yeah, how about that?
In fact, Jerry Jones had the first two guys to do that because Barry Switzer did the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, after Johnson left.
Yeah, you could say Jimmy Johnson did it twice because he allowed Barry Switzer to win that Super Bowl in the NFL to become the second coach to do so. Things obviously did not end well with Jimmy Johnson and Jerry Jones in Dallas, but they seem to be mending those fences now. We'll rank the Hall of Famers coming up a little bit later on. Plus, Josh Allen signed that big contract, what it means for the NFL and what expectations are for the NFL season this upcoming year. We'll get to that. It's the Moore Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Josh Allen got a new contract. What does it mean moving forward? And what are the expectations for the upcoming NFL season this year, according to ESPN's FPI? Get to that here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Our training camp check-in coming up a little bit later on with the Panthers. Plus, which team should be on upset or could be on upset alert week one of the NFL season as we get closer to the start of the football season. Let me tell you about Lyerly's Dry Cleaners. Now at their to-go service, they can pick up or deliver right to your home or office. They handle shirts, suits, and casual wear, as well as curtains, comforters, and regular old household laundry. Call or text them today, 843-377-6994, to schedule a free pickup. You can even track your dry cleaning and see exactly when it'll be ready or delivered. And mention that you heard about Lyerly's right here on ESPN Radio Charleston and get 20% off your next order. Lyerly's Dry Cleaners, now their to-go service. So Josh Allen signed a big contract on Friday. And I don't want to spend too much time on it because, you know, this isn't Buffalo. And I don't know if it's a huge national story. It certainly is going to be discussed as such. It's just the latest benchmark for quarterbacks. And for Lamar Jackson and Baker Mayfield, who will be up for the next contracts, they're going to look to make even more. And then the decision will be on the teams if they want to pay their quarterbacks that much. It also makes the Pat Mahomes deal look like a bargain at this point. Imagine getting Pat Mahomes for less money than Josh Allen. And for Josh, if I'm the Buffalo Bills, a lot of times teams are concerned. They jump into these contracts because they're concerned the longer they wait, the more it's going to cost them. Right? So they bite the bullet and they think, all right, let's get out ahead of this. Because they didn't have to sign Josh Allen just yet. I would like to see a second year like last year from Josh before I gave him all sorts of money. He's had one season in his career in which he averaged over 200 passing yards per game. It is hard to give that guy the amount of money that they did. Right, there's a difference between him and a Mahomes. When you watch Patrick Mahomes, you see he's the real deal. He makes plays. He's a star quarterback. Josh Allen looked really good last year, but it was such a big turnaround from one year to the next that I do want to make sure, I want some confirmation that this is legit, that this is the new Josh Allen, and I'd like to see him perform that way again this year to understand that it wasn't just some sort of fluke or the stars aligning. You know, playing. People point out that these quarterbacks played in mostly empty stadiums this past year. And so that's a concern for some, like a Justin Herbert, that his rookie year was different than a lot of quarterbacks' rookie years because he'd have to deal with the crowd noise. He'd have to deal with the visiting crowd. Let's see how he does this year with true hostile road environments. Many point to why Kirk Cousins had a good year, right? Because Kirk Cousins is one of those believed to be like a fragile quarterback mentally. He didn't have to deal with the crowds and the visiting fans and everything. Let's see how he does this year. And maybe similar to Josh Allen. He had this big improvement last year, maybe in part, right? Maybe it was something like that. Or maybe defenses figure him out a little bit better this year. Who knows? I just want to see it for more than one season before I buy in as large as the Bills did. But here was my main thought, my main takeaway, that if Josh Allen was as good as he appeared this past year, he could be like the new Tom Brady of that division in this sense. Not in the sense that he'll win 6 Super Bowls and be the greatest of all time. But when you look at some of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, in part, why they were able to be successful, in part, is because of the lack of maybe competition around them. For Tom Brady in the AFC East, there were never those quarterbacks around him that could challenge him. Right? The Dolphins never had a great quarterback after Marino, which was when Tom Brady came into the league. The Jets were shuffling through quarterbacks. They had 1 year of Brett Favre. He got injured the second half of the season. That was it. They had Chad Pennington, and then they thought Mark Sanchez would be the guy, and then they thought Geno Smith, and nobody worked out. Same with Buffalo. All right, Drew Bledsoe was solid early in Brady's career when he first went to Buffalo, and then you had J.P. Lausman, and you had Trent Edwards and Ryan Fitzpatrick and, you know, Tyrod Taylor. They never had a star quarterback either. Peyton Manning. During his career, early on, he had to deal with Steve McNair. But by the time Peyton started to win division after division, McNair was out of the division. That's why the Titans, right, when they were going to their Super Bowls, it was led by McNair, and Peyton was a struggling young quarterback. Peyton didn't win a playoff game until a couple years into the league, and by that point, McNair was towards the end of his career in Tennessee. He goes to Baltimore at the very end, then he retires before Peyton even wins a Super Bowl. Or I think he retired the year Peyton won a Super Bowl. But the rest of that division, the Jaguars, right? I mean, they had Byron Leftwich. They had David Garrard. Nobody too special. And Peyton was able to win the division year after year. And that's not to take anything away from him, but just didn't have the same competition. The Texans were a startup. You had David Carr, who was, you know, never the same. And the Titans, after McNair, couldn't replace him. Vince Young had one good season. Then you had Kerry Collins, who won 13 games 1 year. And, you know, he had bounced around all these other quarterbacks over the years that the Titans, up until this point, Ryan Tannehill, never have had some sort of Pro Bowl franchise quarterback. Even Brett Favre in Green Bay for the majority of his career. The Vikings bounced around from quarterback to quarterback. They brought in Warren Moon. They brought in Randall Cunningham, both at the end of their careers. Then they had Dante Culpepper for a few years. But then after that, it was, you know, Tavares Jackson and Gus Frerotte and this guy and that guy. Brad Johnson at the end of his career. The Lions have never had a quarterback. The Bears. Even when Jim McMahon won the Super Bowl, it wasn't because of his play. The Bears have never had a quarterback, up until Jay Cutler, if you want to say he's the best quarterback the Bears have ever had, and that was when Favre was already out of Green Bay. It helps. It's not what makes their entire careers or success, but it helps. It provides you an easier path to the playoff. You get to face these teams. 6 of your games every year are within the division. You will always have that quarterback advantage. Gives you an easier path to the playoff just by winning your division. And if you do, you'll probably get a home playoff game out of it or some sort of home field advantage. It's not to say these careers were built off of that single fact. But you go back and you look, Tom Brady, his competitors in his own division could never figure out the quarterback. Peyton Manning, during his time with the Colts, the majority of his career, the other teams in the division could not figure out the quarterback. Brett Favre, for the majority of his career in Green Bay, the other teams in the division could not figure out quarterback. And so now you look at the AFC East, and we'll see what the future holds. But the Bills believe they have a star in Josh Allen. And then you look elsewhere. We'll see if Tua works out or not. I don't think so. We'll see if Zach Wilson works out or not in New York. I don't think he will. In New England, we'll see if Cam Newton, for the next couple of years, leading to Mac Jones, will help them win Super Bowls. I'm not so sure. Now, there's a lot of questions around these other quarterbacks, but if you were to pick a quarterback today out of that division, or if you were to try to stack them up or see who should feel the best about their quarterback position, certainly it's the Bills. The Bills are the only team in that division that should feel comfortable about their quarterback. They won the division last year. They're the favorites to do so again this year. They'll be the favorites again probably next year as well and for the near future, and in large part because they believe they found the quarterback and the rest of those teams are struggling. Will Josh Allen have the career of a Peyton Manning, a Tom Brady, a Brett Favre? No, but he'll have an opportunity to control that division for years to come, unless Zach Wilson turns out to be one of the best quarterbacks in the league, right? If Tua does develop to be one of the best quarterbacks, I don't think so. We still may be a couple of years away from that anyways. But the Bills certainly have at least gotten a head start on that quarterback position in their own division. Maybe that's worth paying to keep him around. Now, ESPN FPI, they put out their predictions for the upcoming football season. It's an analytical service that ESPN does. It crunches all the numbers. It's a computer that tells you what's going to happen this year. They try to predict the outcomes. And the most likely teams to win the Super Bowl this year, not much of a surprise, Chiefs number one, Buccaneers two. You would guess those would be the top two teams. The Buffalo Bills are number three, followed by the Packers and then the Ravens. Those are your top five. So the Bills are number three. They have the third best odds to win the Super Bowl this year, according to ESPN's FPI. And again, in part, you have a little bit of an easier division. You win that division, you have a playoff spot waiting for you with a home game. Probably have home field advantage. That helps. They'll have to find a way to get past the Chiefs, most likely to win the AFC, but the Bills certainly should have another good year. The most likely Super Bowl matchup, according to ESPN's FPI, is a rematch. They give an 8% chance that the Chiefs and Buccaneers will rematch in this year's Super Bowl. That would be hard to believe, that we would get a direct rematch. Doesn't happen very often. The Bills-Buccaneers is the second most likely option. Then the Chiefs, Packers, Chiefs, 49ers, Ravens, Buccaneers. Those are the top five there. They have all sorts of different odds that they have put out today as they crunch all the numbers. They have Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars finishing with the fourth worst record in the NFL this year. Possibility, but I do think that the Jaguars will be better. And you could go look online at ESPN's FPI. They also have the breakdown of percentages for each team to win their division, who they believe will be the different division winners in the NFL season this year. But ESPN's FPI believes that the Bills, now with a signed Josh Allen, are the third best team in the league this year behind last year's two Super Bowl participants, Kansas City and Tampa Bay. We'll be ranking the Hall of Famers coming up in a little bit from over the weekend, all the Hall of Famers that went into the Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio for the NFL over this past weekend. Plus, we'll hear from a couple of others as well. Peyton Manning had his speech. Edgerrin James, his former teammate, a lot of others as well. Calvin Johnson, we'll get to some of that sound throughout the afternoon and also rank some of those Hall of Famers as well coming up. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, what a Hall of Fame class over the weekend for the NFL. Due to the pandemic, it was a combination of not only this year's class, but last year's class, and also the senior committee and the NFL 100. A lot of big names went into the Hall of Fame. How would you order the Hall of Famers in terms of the best of the best? We'll do that coming up here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We'll have our training camp check-in coming up next hour at the Carolina Panthers as we continue to bounce around from training camp to training camp here in the Southeast for the most part to see what's going on with some of the closer teams leading up to the NFL season. Speaking of the NFL, we had the Hall of Fame weekend, of course, that was started with the first preseason game on Thursday. And then it led to the Hall of Fame inductions over the weekend. And as I've been saying all afternoon and just mentioned a moment ago, it was an incredible class because it was last year's and this year's and the NFL 100 and the senior committee, which put Drew Pearson in. And, you know, we couldn't do this last year because of the pandemic. So because there were so many guys going in and so many speeches, they had to have a strict time limit. I think it was only like 8 minutes that they could each talk. So it's actually, I shouldn't say funny, but when you hear some of the clips, you hear the guys talking really fast because they're trying to get through as much as they can. And they're talking quickly off their notes, for most of them. Not all of them, but a lot of them, right? They're trying to get through. They're trying to cover as much ground as they can in the 8 minutes before the music starts playing to yank them off the stage. Now, I thought Edgerrin James had a really good message. A lot of guys get up there. They use their life to help inspire through a story, a message. And Edgerrin James had a good one yesterday as he went into the Hall of Fame. Here's what the Edge had to say in Canton yesterday.
For some reason, I always had to deal with perception. Perception, though, isn't always reality. It definitely wasn't my reality. People looked at my gold teeth and dreads and were shocked and surprised. I had never been under arrest or spent time in jail. So many people told me that you can't have dreads and gold teeth and be accepted in the NFL, but I never listened. I always knew who I was, a great football player, a great father, a proud black man, a lion, and this was my mane. Which many of those doubters would later discover once they got to know the real me. Times have changed. Look around the league. Look at some of the young stars. As a matter of fact, look at my Pro Football Hall of Fame bust. Rocking the same dreads they said I shouldn't. My closing message, proudly represent the real you. Follow your dreams, aim high, and create the life you want to live. And to all those who have been judged prematurely because of their appearance, the way they speak, where they come from, and in the minds of many should be locked up in prison, I represent us. I'm forever immortalized, locked up in the Canton Correctional Institution. Inmate number 336 in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. My career started with gold teeth and ended with this gold jacket. Good night and God bless.
Edgerrin James at his speech yesterday. I thought that was pretty good in Canton. Now, it's hard to do because not only the class is so strong, but also they're all Hall of Famers. So it's hard to rank them and say, like, well, this guy's more of a Hall of Famer than this guy, or this guy had the better career than the, you know, especially 24 hours after they just went into the Hall of Fame. They should all be celebrated, all should be honored. They're all great talents, Hall of Fame talents, some of the best to ever play in the sport. But because this class, ultra class, uber class with the multiple years here, was so strong, I figured we would try to order the top 10. Now, we usually do a top 10 list every Tuesday. We'll do another one tomorrow. But why not try to rank these now here today from the Hall of Famers that went in over the weekend? So from 10 to 1. And by the way, let me preface this by saying I left Drew Pearson off. Now, I always thought Drew Pearson should have been a Hall of Famer. I didn't think he should have waited this long. But it is just so hard to judge him because he played mostly in the 70s to most of the other guys that went into the Hall of Fame over the weekend who played in, like, say, the last 20 to 30 years. You know, Drew Pearson went into the Hall of Fame the way it worked out with Isaac Bruce and Calvin Johnson. Try to compare their numbers. It was just a different era in the 70s. Drew Pearson led the NFL in receiving in 1977. He led the league in receiving. He had 870 receiving yards. That was the most in the league. Calvin Johnson had like 2,000 receiving yards not too long ago, or came close to it. So it's just hard to compare. So I left Drew Pearson off the list because it's hard to compare different eras. In his era, he was a Hall of Fame wide receiver. He should have went into the Hall of Fame, and he should not have had to wait until this year with the selection committee, the whatever they call it, that put in former players that are no longer on the ballot. So with that said, with that little preface there of Drew Pearson being excluded, the top 10 of players that went in over the weekend, and what a crew it was. I would put Steve Atwater at number 10. One of the hardest-hitting safeties back before we really cared about hard hits and concussions for the Denver Broncos. And you could go look up, you could get lost in some YouTube highlights of some of the bigger hits that he ever gave. I put him 10, and John Lynch number 9. The difference for me was that John Lynch was also another very good safety, very smart. We know about in that Super Bowl, he was calling out the plays against the Raiders before they even ran the plays because he knew their playbook so good. They never changed it. He learned it from John Gruden. He had them down to a T, and that's why their defense dominated Rich Gannon that day. But Lynch, why I put him number 9 and ahead of Atwater is because he was part of that legendary defense in Tampa Bay. And he was the captain. He was the guy, him and Rondé Barber in that secondary. And that was one of the greatest defenses we have ever seen, and in part because of what John Lynch was able to do at the back end of that defense. So I give him the nudge ahead of Steve Atwater in that defensive backfield at number 9. Number 8 of the best of the Hall of Famers to go in over the weekend, Alan Faneca, Steelers offensive lineman. Now, it's tough to try to compare offensive linemen to a quarterback or a wide receiver because those offensive linemen, they're so crucial, but it's hard to judge their value compared to a quarterback. You don't have the same stats for a lineman. But Alan Faneca made it to 9 straight Pro Bowls with the Steelers. And during his time there for Pittsburgh, you know, you had a young Ben Roethlisberger. You had like a Tommy Maddox originally. The Steelers were a defensive team that early on, Roethlisberger started to sling it all over the yard. But for a period of time, it was about running the football. It was about playing hard-nosed defense. And they were just a tough physical team, especially in that division. Alan Faneca was the stalwart of that offensive line, helping them win a couple of Super Bowls, 9 straight Pro Bowls, I think 6-time All-Pro, one of the better linemen to do it in the last 20 years. So I would put him at number 8 on the list. Number 7 would be Charles Woodson. Now, I have to be honest. I'm a Vikings fan, right? So I hated watching Charles Woodson all the time playing for the Green Bay Packers in the second half of his career. And he was such a physical corner, and he would get away with holding all the time, and I'm just a bitter Vikings fan. But Charles Woodson, because of what he did not only at Michigan but then to go on to the NFL, it was nice for him. I didn't care to see it, but it was nice for him at the end of his career to be able to finally get that Super Bowl when he did win with Green Bay at the tail end of his career, finished then with the Raiders, the same team that he started with, but to be able to play for that long of a time. Right, like Aaron Rodgers called out Charles Woodson in that press conference when he returned about the players, the many talented players that Green Bay let walk away. Because Green Bay thought at his age and moving to to safety, he couldn't do it. But he went to the Raiders and still played 3 more years and was pretty solid and kept playing in the defensive backfield until he was 38 years old. So there's something to be said for that as well. Charles Woodson makes the top 10 list, certainly. I have him at number 6, I believe. I lost track here. Yeah, number 6. Number five would be Isaac Bruce. Now, Isaac Bruce is one of those that I think we underrate because of how explosive passing attacks have become. But when Isaac Bruce retired, he was only behind Jerry Rice for career receiving yards. So at the time of his retirement, he was number 2. He had 8 1,000-yard seasons. He was part of the quote-unquote greatest show on turf. I would tell you that was truly the 98 Vikings, but I digress. But Isaac Bruce, I think it gets overshadowed because not only the offensive change in the last 20, 25 years, but also he was on a team with Torrey Holt and with Marshall Faulk and Kurt Warner. It was a team of Hall of Famers, Orlando Brown on the offensive line. And so maybe maybe you take something away from his performance because of the talent he played around. But Isaac Bruce, I put at number 5 because of what he accomplished at the wide receiver position. When he retired, only Jerry Rice was better at that point over the course of their careers. Number 4 is Steve Hutchinson. Again, it's tough to try to put numbers or really try to grade an offensive line, but Steve Hutchinson was so good over the course of his career, originally with Seattle, and then many were surprised that Seattle even let him get away. And he continued on in Minnesota and then even Tennessee at the end of his career, and he was a 7-time Pro Bowler, 7 straight years. Offensive linemen can wear down a little bit quicker, as was the case with Hutch. But during his prime, when he was young, when he was healthy, 7 straight Pro Bowlers or Pro Bowls, 5 All-Pro teams. He was on the All-Decade team. Steve Hutchinson was fantastic. Blocked for, Sean Alexander and then Adrian Peterson, some really good running backs allowing them to have success, and then Chris Johnson in Tennessee as well. Helped some running backs have even more success. Number 3 of the best Hall of Famers to go in this weekend, I would say Troy Polamalu for his style of play with Pittsburgh at the back end of some of those really good defenses as they went on to win Super Bowls. And he was the leader of those defenses. Now, he's well known, of course, for the hair and his wild play. And, you can see the highlights of him jumping over the line of scrimmage, timing it perfectly, leaping over one of the guards and going to sack the quarterbacks. Just his style of play was so unique and so different, and he went out there without a care, without a regard. And it wasn't just like a hard hitter like Steve Atwater, but just the way he played with reckless abandon, but also to be able to use that athleticism and to use the awareness and the smartness that he had, won a couple of Super Bowls, was a defensive player of the year, four-time All-Pro. Troy Polamalu, I put at number three. Number two, I would say, is Calvin Johnson. Calvin Johnson's one of the best wide receivers to ever play the position. He has one of those great combinations of just everything. The size, speed, jumping ability. Him and Randy Moss are probably the two best at, like, jump balls. Just throw it up. They'll go get it for you. And the years that Calvin Johnson had in Detroit, now, they never won anything. He still wasn't enough to help the Lions actually win some games or get to the playoffs, but he was so dominant. And we'll play the audio coming up, but I didn't realize that Calvin Johnson dealt with so many health issues over the course of his career because he rarely missed time and always performed, but that seems to be the reason why he walked away from the game when he was only 30. But in 2012, he had almost 2,000 receiving yards for a team that really didn't have much else for Detroit. You knew when you played the Lions, yep, it's going to Calvin Johnson, and yet he still had almost 2,000 receiving yards, over 120 catches that year. The year prior, he had almost 1,700 receiving yards. I mean, he was just incredible. And again, as a Vikings fan, having to see them play him twice a year, he was a nightmare for everyone. Calvin Johnson was so good at the wide receiver. He's one of the greatest wide receivers of all time. He's number two, only behind Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning's a top five quarterback of all time. Of course, anything involving Peyton Manning, he'll be the headliner. And he was of this Hall of Fame class as well. A lot of great talents went into the Football Hall of Fame there in Canton over the weekend, but I think none better at what they did than Peyton Manning. Calvin Johnson's close, right? Like, if you compare Peyton Manning to fellow quarterbacks, and you compared Calvin Johnson to fellow wide receivers, and even Steve Hutchinson to other guards, and Troy Polamalu to other safeties, those are some of the best at their position to ever do it. But because the quarterback position is so crucial, so important, Peyton Manning, I do put number one as the best player of the bunch going in this weekend. I think Calvin Johnson is up there, though. I think Calvin Johnson, as I said, one of the best wide receivers to ever play the game, and wide receiver positions, those are the big profiles. You think of Randy Moss, Chris Carter, Jerry Rice. We pay a lot of attention to those guys, more so than the great offensive linemen. So Calvin Johnson certainly is one of the all-time greats. But he did also only play 9 years. Peyton played until he was 40. That plays a role as well. Peyton Manning was the best of the best this weekend, but what a class. You have Atwater, Pearson, John Lynch, Alan Faneca, Charles Woodson, Isaac Bruce, Steve Hutchinson, Troy Polamalu, Calvin Johnson, Peyton Manning, even Edgerrin James, Jimmy Johnson going in this weekend. Big names in Canton for the NFL Hall of Fame. Coming up, we'll have our training camp check-in for the Carolina Panthers when we come back. It's the Moore Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.